ecumenical council of the year 553, which was called by the Emperor Justinian. Remember, the first of these ecumenical councils we met in antiquity was the one that gathered at Nicaea in 325, called by the Emperor Constantine to deal with the Arian crisis. There continued to be a series of these ecumenical councils in antiquity. Indeed, the one which is assembled by Justinian in 553 is the fifth of these ecumenical councils in antiquity. Now, this council was called to deal with the problem of Monophysitism. Now, I mentioned a moment ago that the Christians of the Eastern Mediterranean were badly divided between Orthodox communities and Monophysite communities. Orthodox communities, generally speaking, those who held to Nicaea's teachings on the Trinity and to Chalcedon's teachings on the divinity and humanity of Christ. Whereas Monophysites, as we've seen, are those who stressed the divinity over against the humanity of Christ. Now, for Justinian to address this problem is, from one point of view, not news at all. All right? This is a dog bites man story. This has been a problem for a very long time. What is interesting here is that Justinian worked very hard to try to find a theological formula. And by when I'm saying Justinian, I of course mean the theological advisors around him. This is not Justinian's personal work. Justinian worked very hard to try to find a theological formula that would reconcile the Monophysites. He wasn't really willing to give up the Chalcedonian balance of divine and human in Jesus, but he really wanted to find a way theologically to tip the balance of language, to see if it was possible to reconcile the Monophysite populations, and thus, in important respects, to unify his eastern provinces. He recognized quite clearly that coercion was really out of the question. Now, as Justinian searched for a formula to try to find a way to reconcile the Monophysites, he basically ignored the bishops of Rome, who stuck absolutely, strictly, literally, wholly to the formulation of Chalcedon, and who said to the emperor, in effect, you can't change anything. We've settled this problem. It's over and done. Leave it alone. We can see again, as we look back, that the East is willing to make its own way on matters of theology. It's willing to sort of formulate its own definitions. It's willing to understand its own history and tradition on its own terms. And, in fundamental respects, to address itself to its own problems. At the time, it wasn't yet clear, really, that any division was underway. But we, perhaps, can see this more clearly than they. Perhaps the greatest symbolic representation of the work of the Emperor Justinian was the building of the massive church of Hagia Sophia. When the emperor entered it, he is said to have exclaimed, "Solomon, I have outdone thee." Now, what's very interesting, of course, is that he hearkened back immediately to the Old Testament King Solomon, who had built the temple in Jerusalem. And so Justinian takes great pride in his remarkable church in Constantinople and thinks that he has now outdone Solomon of old. That historical reference is, in its way, interesting. It shows us that even as we can perceive change, evolution, new developments, we can see them looking to the past, looking behind them, holding or trying to hold to history. Now, Justinian did a number of quite novel things here. For example, he got Isidore of Miletus and Anthemius of Troll, two distinguished mathematicians, to design the building for him. He created a church that is huge, first of all, and that makes nods in the direction of traditional Roman architecture. From one point of view, the Great Church of Hagia Sophia is a set of intersecting basilicas, a set of intersecting rectangular buildings. One of the chief architectural forms used in the building is the arch. There is a great dome that sits above the building. The use of architectural detail. Remember, we talked about Roman buildings. We talked, for example, about the Flavian Amphitheater at Rome. We talked there about the fact that the Romans had become very gifted at using architectural details to decorate a building and not necessarily to provide any structural functions. Well, Hagia Sophia exhibits that quality as well. And yet, when all is said and done, the sense of space, the sense of color, It's a riot of color on the inside of Hagia Sophia. Marble stones of greens and purples and yellows and beiges and browns. It's quite a remarkable building in every imaginable way. It is something different.